Hi, everyone, and welcome to this episode of the Ophthalmology Times iPod podcast series on innovation. I'm Cheryl Stevenson, Group Editorial Director here with the Eye Care Group at MGH Life Sciences. And today we continue our focus on innovation, and we're really delighted to have Dr. Robert Chang join us today from Stanford University. Welcome to you, Dr. Chang. I know you gave a really interesting talk just on the heels of the American Academy of Ophthalmology meeting in Chicago, regarding large language models, putting the buzz into perspective for glaucoma. So, first of all, for our audience, take a moment and introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about this interesting presentation.
Hi Cheryl, thank you so much for inviting me to this podcast. It's an honor to be part of it and to discuss about this interesting topics I had at Academy. I'm an ophthalmologist specializing in glaucoma. Been working at Stanford University for 15 years, and I'm really excited about generative AI and the possibilities of AI in our field. If it's not something you've heard about already, I'm pretty sure you're going to be hearing about large language models as they are what they say software is eating the world, while large language models is eating the world.
So tell us a little about your presentation at the Academy. Your title is really intriguing regarding putting the buzz into perspective in glaucoma. What are some of the key takeaways from your talk?
Well, large language models is a evolution of deep learning. It's part of what you may have heard about previously with AI and computer vision, where it's really good at facial recognition, maybe diagnosing diabetic retinopathy through convolutional neural networks. So now the new term is foundational multimodal large language models. And what these are is the ability to not just answer a specific question, like, was there the presence of mild or more than mild diabetic retinopathy? But the models are trained so large that they can actually have a conversation with you, like the famous, infamous chatbot, OpenAI's ChatGPT, or it can do some summarization. You may give it multiple contents from different sources, and it can take links from websites, PDFs, information where you can get a really good summary of that information. And it can also do things like already start searching the web. So you may ask questions, and then it can do some deep dive research into resources like on PubMed, and it can generate text very easily. The main issues with LLMs is that, of course, it never knows if what it's outputting is real. It's just a statistical probability of how words sound together, sort of human reinforcement to say that sounds like a good output. So the companies, whether it's Google, Facebook or Meta, OpenAI, they all have such huge data sets that now these large language models sound pretty realistic. Sounds like you're talking with a human, and in some cases, answering questions that can be brainstorming-like, coming up with new ideas, or searching for correct answers, but you always need to double check and reference whether what's outputted is correct. How can this be related to ophthalmology? I think there are some big areas in our communication with patients where the LLMs can do a great job of coming up with educational content, whether it's someone who's, only had high school education or someone who's very professional. And we can adjust with these LLM outputs glaucoma information, for example, to really make sure patients understand the disease, get the right treatment, stay compliant and adherent. And so I think there's a lot of opportunity there.
Yeah, it certainly is a fascinating and quickly evolving field or part of technology in our profession for sure. And I just wondered how you've been using it so far in the management of patients with glaucoma in practice. What are some of the things that you've been utilizing this for?
I think most ophthalmologists will be experiencing the virtual scribe experience of LLMs, where you have someone normally listening to the patient doctor conversation and then transcribing it. And that's been by humans, whether it's recorded or live. And now we're starting to see that a lot of this can be done with the LLM, where it listens to the conversation ambiently while you're just doing your normal exam, and then it can transcribe the most important parts into the ophthalmology note. This technology is being deployed most hospital systems. While it's mainly targeted for internal medicine because of the large data sets that they have for that through all the transcriptions, there is going to be customization for ophthalmology, and it's just a matter of time with templates and training examples where the AI will probably be pretty good at writing down the important findings into the EHR. And I think this is probably the way most ophthalmologists will be introduced to LLMs. Now, whether we talked about the education side, there isn't an existing tool yet, but I know that people are creating their one-offs for different kind of visits. I'm very interested in studying, how we communicate the need for SLT laser as a first-line treatment for glaucoma rather than drops, based on all the evidence-based medicine. Can better AI-generated communication and more time and more interaction spent with patients while they're waiting to see their doctor, could that make a difference in making sure the patients get the right treatment at the right time? This may be an opportunity for LLMs to shine. That being said, there's a lot of potential pitfalls, right? We don't want AI to say the wrong thing. It has to really pull from a database of vetted information so that it's not just generating hallucinations or things from scratch that could be harmful. So it takes a bit of doctor insight and input into these fine-tuning these models, and that's what's undergoing right now. And so I think in the future, once we have train these models to be safe and effective, then you'll see a lot more implementation in the clinics.
Do you see a time maybe when this would become a standard tool in the day-to-day, managing of patients in your clinic?
Well, the lowest hanging fruit for standard tool use would be like sometimes you're got a new, patient, unusual presentation, and you're like, wait a minute, I need to go outside. I'll be right back. And then you technically, go on any kind of up-to-date or Google source or iWiki or something, and you look up some information for something that you want to double check. And now actually there are, secure and private HIPAA compliant LLMs where you can do the same thing. And instead of just having a single search bar and search the one question that you're looking for, you actually can have multiple queries in a row, and the search, chat bot essentially can string it all together. So it has a chain of sequence of searches where you can dive deeper or zoom out. And that can't really be done today very easily with a typical Google search. So I think this is where we can start using it. We're not in the realm of, let's say, regulated uses where AI is making a diagnosis or assistant tool to a clinical scenario, but instead helping you just retrieve information, organize information, output some letters that you don't want to type the same thing over and over to the patient, but you can generate it through LLM tools. I think this is where everyone could play around with it and then really understand the use cases in their workflow where it can make a difference, speeding things up. Obviously, there's a lot of emails that patients send to physicians that would like to write a longer response, but we don't have time. So we try to just write the quick and easy short response, and ideally AI and LLMs could augment that so that yes, we're doing the final sign off, but take a lot of the work out of typing the same part over and over, or templating, always having the same template, which is not great for every single patient because you really want customized answers to each individual. So getting that empathy and doctor relation while you think AI is getting in the way and can't do it like humans can, in fact, it can make you even much better at having improved communication without taking extra time.
Yeah, it sounds like there's a lot of efficiencies as a benefit of using it. And I was just kind of curious, like you mentioned about summarizations and aggregating information. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
I think once you get beyond, just inputting one question and getting one result answer as sort of your first playing around with LLMs, and you realize that you can segment and really dig deep into your responses, then you'll realize, well, maybe I can, instead of just one source at a time, take many different sources like different journal articles or different videos, and LLMs can get all the information that take you a lot of time to usually go through. But instead, it could be one of the most efficient ways of aggregating across different sources. There is something to be said where, you can't trust that every algorithm will be pooling exactly what you're looking for, because you tend to make assumptions when you search for something, but models don't have any assumptions. It's all statistics. So you have to say when you're searching for something, what population is it? What time frame? You can even say which country or, because you might assume that the LLMs, oh, I'm just searching in America, but the LLM doesn't know that. So whatever it's in training data, it may search in other locations. So you have to be very detailed and organized and specific. This is where it can shine because normally that would take a lot of time to look at all those different things. But if you get good at querying the models by knowing exactly what you're looking for, then the model performs quite well. If you don't know what you're looking for, this is when the models could just generate any old answer and it really is not helping your quest in getting the information you need.
Yeah, so really a very refined search. I think the prompt that you use is probably the most important factor there, it sounds like. I was just kind of curious too, in terms of like trainings for residents and students, fellows and so forth. Is this something that they could use in their as part of their, education or training?
Yeah, we just had a discussion on this with some residents who wanted to, get ready for their interviews for fellowship. And I'm like, well, you can take all the information about the program that you're going to, whatever web information they have, and about the doctors and about their papers they publish, insert that into the model, tell the model to act like a avatar interviewer who's going to, ask you questions about yourself, and then you practice talking to the model. So it's almost like you're practicing interviewing the real thing, even though it's not the real thing. And this helps you, prep, and so you can feel more comfortable. So I think there's a lot of scenarios like this where you can, teach yourself better by interacting with a model and whether it's like practice questions. Obviously that has to get the right data set, but there is the potential here, as shown in a lot of literature, where AI can perform almost just as well as humans can perform as long as you train it in that way with the information needed. Before, the models didn't perform that well because they weren't trained on trillions and billions of words and data sets and videos and all kinds of inputs. But now the generalizable knowledge inside of basically every creation that you can digitally get a hold of and put into a large language model, every email written, every social media post, every YouTube video, all of a sudden it can perform at a reasonable, it looks like it's having some kind of thought, even though it again has no thought at all, no causality, just associations. And so understanding where the sources of that data is coming from, then you can, mold what you're trying to get out of it, knowing those limitations. This is understanding the potential and the pitfall at the same time, because most of it is about hype these days and what's, amazing demos. But actually, if you query a model repetitively over and over and expect to get exactly the same answer each time, LLMs are not really meant for that. They're meant for the slight variation, which is, makes it seem more human response like. And so therefore you have to be careful of that and always cross-reference anything that comes out of an LLM model.
Yeah, are there any ethical considerations or things to consider in that terms?
I think certainly when you're first playing around with things, just assume nothing is private when you play with the LLM model. The reason why the models are out there free for people to use is because they want to gain that interaction as a potential training data and information, reinforcement learning with human feedback. So if there's things that are like PHI and HIPAA related, if there's things that are, you're writing a grant and you want to try helping get a good outline and you don't want some information to be really leaked to other people, then you shouldn't you be using these open commercial models. There are open source models that could be used that you customize to local, so it's not inside the cloud. Or there's secure models that institutions might provide that you may want to access because the information is not going to be getting into areas you wouldn't want it to be in. So there's different approaches and it depends on the topic, how you might use it. If you're just using it to plan your itinerary to go to the AAO meeting, that's one use. But if you're using it, to write letters of recommendations for other people, there's so many different kind of use cases. And again, if you just ask it one prompt called the zero shot prompt from scratch, you're not going to get a very specific, amazing answer. It may sound realistic, but it's too generalized. So it's all about prompt engineering. In fact, that's almost like a job for a lot of these tech companies. So if you're able to figure out exactly what you need, the inputs that need to mold the output need to be available and searchable by these models. You can try Notebook LM, for example, which is made by Google, which even can create podcasts with a click of a button. All this is generally free to try out. You can generate surgical videos, movies, you can do PowerPoint presentations. There's just a lot of ophthalmologists that can start taking advantage of these tools to make their life, more efficient.
Yeah, your passion really comes through regarding all this. And I just wondered, what have you found to be the most fascinating aspect of using this technology?
I think it's as soon as I think I found a really good one, and then 6 months later, it's obsolete. That's what's most fascinating. I produce a avatar that has matched lip syncing with realistic audio and a picture, and everything's generated by AI. And then I think, wow, that's really amazing. And then that's like outdated in like 6 months. So as we give more and more data to these LAMs, there's no ceiling. The more compute power, the more data, it keeps improving. So it's really good for experimentation. We just can kind of find the use case for whatever task you're doing, how it can help you be more efficient. You can start making songs out of this, and the songs can become like a public service announcement. I gave a bunch of examples of these kinds of fun things to do in my talk at the AAO Symposium, and I encourage other people to play around with it.
Yeah, I mean, looking into the future, what do you see as like maybe like the ultimate goal or hope for using this in ophthalmology?
I think we need more help with intake of information and more help with accessing a lot of information efficiently and getting it so that we have the key points to make a decision. We spend a lot of time inside electronic records searching for this or that, outside records. I need to see the last test. And if you just had algorithms that could basically pull up what you need just in time as you need it as the ultimate search. I think this could improve and make a difference in our ever, overcrowded clinics. So I think this is why we're so excited for these kind of initial use cases, rather than using it, for predictive analytics and glaucoma, who needs what surgery, because that's kind of, our main, value add as a physician. But yet we just can't get all of the inputs, enough, or have enough people power to assist us in real time. So having a virtual scribe, having an AI agent call patients back, deliver information, help with prior authorizations, pretty much the majority of frustrations in the day-to-day work environment. There's AI agents that are coming into play in the general industry, like Salesforce and all these other companies that sit on a mountain of data, produce agents that can, talk to you on the phone essentially and get things done. I think that's going to come to healthcare and come to medicine in the future because we need it also. And while there's some concerns about privacy and security and ethical questions, it's actually the same problems in the cybersecurity world or in the financial world. And they're also deploying all these AI agents and bots and generative AI tools. And so, as they figure out these challenges, we can kind of learn from that and input it into healthcare as well. My enthusiasm for LLMs has just grown as I've used them myself. So, if you can figure out, I mean, not everyone is obviously going to be able to try everything out and use it, but the interfaces have been improving tremendously. And so, you need less and less technical or programming knowledge to be able to use these. And so that's why I'm sort of an evangelist for saying that all doctors, should try it out, learn the potentials and pitfalls. And then as a society and as subspecialty groups, we can produce, the ultimate education bots or, efficiency tools and kind of validate what we want as, there's no hallucinations and there's no other fix some of the problems from LLMs when they make mistakes.